Welcome to Miller Kane, A True and Exact History, a serialized novel by Samuel Ligon, published for the first time in The Inlander and broadcast by Spokane Public Radio. Miller Kane is made possible by Sprint and The Inlander. Previously on Miller Kane, Miller is on the road hiding 8-year-old Carlene from her father, Connor Callahan, who's out to find her after learning she will soon inherit the Callahan family fortune. To earn money while traveling, Miller has returned to an old writing project, authoring set-aside profiles of famous Americans for an 11th grade history textbook. Each profile is titled Famous American's Name, Hero or Villain. Now, here's author Samuel Ligon.
Chapter 2, Part 4. Back at the hotel, there was no air conditioning and the room was hot. Miller sat on the deck with a glass of whiskey while Carlene reread the first little house book in bed. He had his laptop open on the picnic table, but couldn't get anything started. When he went back in for another drink, Carlene was asleep, her forehead flushed with heat and the unicorn on her cheek smeared, some of the paint on her pillow as well. Miller walked his whiskey outside and sat with it, watching the water, and eventually he started to write. Hero Villain 2, Skip James. Long ago, in the 1960s, when it was still possible to go to space and eat nothing but meat and sugar and carbohydrates and tang and save people from horrible belief systems like communism and anarchism and fascism, and everyone was snorting gluten and lactose constantly, a certain group of people was searching for Skip James. Skip wasn't lost to himself necessarily, but he was lost to the people who needed to find something authentic and American and tortured and beautiful. And if you've heard Skip James, you knew that what they were looking for was the sound of his early records, the only ones that mattered, recorded in 1931, because before we saved the world from fascism, before we could destroy cities with one bomb and then the entire world with a few missiles, before we could blow it up or realize we were melting it down, Skip James was singing in Wisconsin, where he traveled from Mississippi to record 18 songs for Paramount Records. And even though we couldn't blow up the world yet, it was hard, hard times, with dust blowing and people eating babies and everyone so poor and desperate and worn out and hopeless that even Almanzo Wilder, whose wife Laura was writing her little house books then, trying to scrape up a buck or two during the Depression, even Almanzo said, "My life has been mostly disappointments." Laura's father, Pa, would never say such a thing. But this wasn't Pa. This was Laura's husband, Farmer Boy, though he wasn't a boy anymore, nor Laura a girl worshiping her father, poet, fiddle player, fond of cider and music and moving every few years. A gigantic failure when we stop to think about it, depending on how we think about it. Can a happy man be considered a failure? George, include a photo of Pa here, preferably with wife Caroline, or Ma, under or beside the photo of Skip James, and maybe one of Almanzo, preferably one where we can see how gimped up he is. Shall we consider Pa's poverty and constant moving a sign of failure, or does he represent a kind of American optimism? Not a man who couldn't make it where he was, though he couldn't seem to, but a man staying on the edge of the frontier, looking for more gold, better dirt. Pa himself, if not successful, then also not an inveterate gambler, except in his moving, or a child molester, no evidence of this at all, but maybe a drunk in Laura's portrait. Skip James also liked to drink now and then. Certainly more charming and playful and lovable than Ma, God knows, and happy. Pa would never say, as his son-in-law later would, "My life has been mostly disappointments." But even if one could consider Pa a failure, Laura would become a legend, mining from her life the stories that would mythologize her and her family and America, her, him, them, itself. Plenty of things didn't work out on the prairie or on the banks of Plum Creek. Still, might we say that Laura was a success because she was rich and her work was well received, while Skip James was a failure because he was poor and almost nobody heard his work in his time? Might we also suggest that Laura was the inspiration for such songs as Cherry Ball Blues and Devil Got My Woman and Special Rider Blues, Skip singing and I'm So Glad, I'm tired of weeping, tired of moaning, tired of groaning for you. I don't know what to do, don't know what to do, I don't know what to do. Laura never portrays Pa as moaning and groaning, not knowing what to do, though Pa wasn't born on a plantation like Skip James was in 1902, when it seems like plantations would have been gone, but weren't. And Pa didn't participate in the Civil War that was happening all around him, and he was only 25 when it started. Laura's hateful, perfect sister, Mary, born just 3 months before Lee's surrender at Appomattox. Still, no one in the family was touched by the war, except Uncle George, who ran away when he was 14 to be a drummer boy and was wild when he came home. Though the only wildness we see is his bugle playing and dancing as Pa fiddles songs like Arkansas Traveler and Buffalo Gals and Yankee Doodle. Pa wouldn't have known I'm So Glad or Hard Time Killing Floor Blues because he died in 1902, the year Skip James was born. He and Ma never heard Skip wail and moan those beautiful songs recorded not so far from the Big Woods, though by 1931, the Big Woods were gone. And then Skip James was gone, at least from recording, until the 1960s. Did Skip James read Laura's books? Did he know how she mined her life to come up with riches and fame? Was he waiting in his Mississippi hospital bed to be discovered by folk music enthusiasts, white boys from the North mostly, hungry for something pure and genuine, something authentic and non-commercial they could make money from, or at least try to make money from? They were American. Something beautiful and real and born of suffering. This much we know. Skip James was real. And his music was real. He shot people when he was young and bootlegged and sang beautiful, haunting, terrifying songs about cutting a woman in two. Was he waiting to be found by blues miners in 1964? The prospectors wanted to be touched by greatness, affiliated with greatness and what was real, having rejected the confections of Buddy Holly and Elvis and Chuck Berry and the Beach Boys and Jan and Dean. Only the year before, 1963, John Hurt had been discovered, extracted from the richest blues mine in the world, Mississippi, where Son House was also from, though he would be found in Rochester, New York, the same year Skip was found, because everything was still possible. It was the year of the Civil Rights Act, which would address some of the race/slavery issues that had been addressed 100 years before and would have to be addressed again and again forever. One of the beautiful Kennedy dolls had been assassinated, but we were still in Kennedy doll thrall. We would defeat communism in Vietnam. We would fight wars on poverty and right wrongs. We were terribly optimistic, even though a few years earlier we had been hopeless. We were a little like P.T. Barnum regarding the fat boys he displayed in the 1840s, his infant Hoosier Giant and Highland Mammoth boys, proclaiming as he did in a letter to another showman, "I must have the fat boy." All of America wanted the fat boy in 1844. And in 1964, our collective white pre-hipster Barnum blues miners proclaimed, "We must have the blues man." And we found him. We found him. We discovered him over and over. Maybe Skip James and Lightning Hopkins and Son House were the opposite of Barnum's fat boys, another side of the coin, because Barnum's fat boys only had to be fat. The bigger, the better. Barnum had to have them, and so did we, but they didn't have to do anything. Skip James made beautiful songs. The folklorists had to have him, and so did we. But no one could have his songs as much as he could, whether he was found or not. And when he said, "I'm so glad," and "I'm so tired," and "I don't know what to do," we knew exactly what he meant. And so did Laura Ingalls Wilder, his step-grandmother, when she wrote at the end of her first book, "They could not be forgotten," she thought, "because now is now. It can never be a long time ago." Skip and Laura and Pa, timeless and immortal. This is now, Laura realizes, in 1860-something, and again in 1930-something, and again every time we read those words. This is now, right now, and again forever. George, include a link to the 1931 recording of I'm So Glad in the digital edition. Yes, it's scratchy, but it's going to save somebody's life, probably yours.
You've been listening to Miller Kane, A True and Exact History, a novel by Samuel Ligon, published in weekly installments by The Inlander, with archived audio at SpokanePublicRadio.org/MillerKane. Our theme music is by Indian Goat. I'm your producer, Chris Messini. Join us next week for the latest episode of Miller Kane.